This week on The Inswinger.
They look more mature. They look like they believe in what Maresca is doing. It seems to be suiting that team well. I think they're playing to their strengths.
When you're Arsenal and you're competing with City and Liverpool, you can't drop these games.
There are no qualified English coaches available. Graham Potter is not qualified to coach England.
What does the future look like if Pep decides to stay? And if he decides to leave, does that open things up? All right, welcome back to The Inswinger Season 4, Episode 6. I'm Charlie DiMatteo, joined alongside
Harrison McGlashan.
We had the bye week last week. There was an international break, but we're back this week. There were some big games at the top of the table amongst some big clubs, so we're going to get into all of that. We've got a good random, not-so-random segment of the week to finish things off. A special shout-out. It is Harrison's 22nd birthday, so claps.
Oh, thank
claps
you so
in
much.
The studio for that. When we started this pod, you were a young...
Yes.
18, 17-year-old?
Just a little teenager.
It's been a while. So we're back here for the birthday pod, but let's get straight into it. The highlight of this weekend, I think, was Anfield. Liverpool-Chelsea. Bit of a test for Enzo Maresca's men against Arne Slot's men. Two teams who obviously have big presence in the league, but are kind of in one shape or another transitioning. Liverpool probably further ahead than Chelsea, but it was a decent game. Chelsea held their own, went a goal down, got level, but Liverpool snatched the lead right back just a few minutes later, and then that was that. 2-1. Chelsea gave a good account of themselves, but couldn't come away with the 3 points. What were your main takeaways from the game?
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was a good game. I thought the biggest positive for Chelsea was that they were in the game and very competitive. They went to Anfield, and I thought, honestly, they were the better team up until the penalty claims where it started to go a bit south. But overall, I thought the game was pretty even. I mean, the stats will tell you that. Three big chances each. Chelsea actually had a bit more possession, which is telling, I think, of their growing confidence. And that Anfield crowd was frustrated in the first half. And you have to give Maresca and Chelsea some credit for that. I thought Jackson impressed again, got his goal, showed, you know, a real willingness to run in behind, which caused Liverpool problems for that goal. Palmer was a little bit quiet, but, you know, it wasn't quite his day, but he still tried to make things happen. And just, I thought Liverpool did a good job on him, to be fair to them. And Madueke and Sancho looked dangerous at the start, but they started to go a little bit quiet as well. So, listen, there are ups and downs here for Chelsea, but honestly, I thought as well, that was one of the better performances I've seen from Caicedo in the midfield. I thought he looked sharp. So plenty of positives from Chelsea, despite the defeat. They look more mature. They look like they believe in what Maresca is doing. It seems to be suiting that team well. I think they're playing to their strengths. I think had they just been able to hold on to that equalizer a little bit longer, maybe it would have been a slightly different game, but it's just always a tough task to chase Liverpool at Anfield. Yeah. So, and not many teams can go there and win. So, yeah, I agree with you. I thought they gave a good account of themselves.
Yeah, and I think a big point to take away here is that over the last, you know, 12 to 18 months, I think there have been numerous times where Chelsea have just looked out of sorts on the big stage, and with these youthful players who don't have a lot of experience, as we've touched on so many times, I think it's important, like you said, that the likes of Caicedo had a good game at Anfield, you know, Sunday afternoon, pressure's on, and they didn't come away with the win, but like you said, they gave a good count of themselves, had more possession. XG was slightly more favorable to Liverpool. They didn't create a whole lot, Chelsea, but the fact they were in the game and showed a bit of poise on the big stage, I think, is another kind of tick of the box for Maresca and this Chelsea team as they continue to develop, because it's not going to be a straight line. There's going to be, you know, bumps and turns, but I think this is a positive, and they'll have liked to have get a point from it, but they didn't. But lots of good things to take away from that game. Moving on to the two title contenders, Arsenal and City. Differing weekends for these two. We'll start with Arsenal on the South Coast against Bournemouth. Went down to 10 men, lost 2-0. It's a weird one because these kind of results, you have to take into consideration that they were down to 10 men, but you also have to look at the red card from Saliba. It was reckless. He does maybe, you know, have a clanger in him. What did you make of that game? How much can we really look to this scoreline, and how much is it just kind of, you know, 10 men changed the game?
Well, listen, this is a pattern for Arsenal, right? This is, what, the third time they've been down to 10 men this season? We've only played 8 games. So I think, yeah, you're right, Saliba probably just has to be more disciplined there. And these red cards are letting them down. I mean, you can't cough up too many points. I know it's early, and I think they will make it up. But, you know, they're only hurting themselves with mistakes like these. And but I have to say, even before the red, it wasn't an easy evening. I think it's hard to see Arsenal losing that game if it stays 11-11. They are missing Odegaard and Saka, in my opinion. I think you saw that on Saturday. They just didn't really look the same. And I know it's early, like I said, but I don't think they can afford too many more of these. But I do have confidence that they will make up the points later down the line, especially when they're back to full strength. I think that'll help them out massively. But I think they're getting a little bit stretched here with the squad. Obviously, still a really sharp team on paper, and they can score plenty of goals and keep plenty out. They'll miss Saliba at the weekend against Liverpool. That could be a big miss. Of course, they've got enough. And again, I think they'll make it up. But I think Arteta needs to have a word with the squad here to just concentrate a little bit more, maybe.
Yeah, I think I don't read into the result as much as I do, like you said, the red card, because it is becoming a bit of a pattern here. And I worry that maybe there's this, the word I use is aggressive, and aggressiveness can be a huge asset in a title battle. I mean, going forward in the final third, you have to be aggressive. You have to be cutthroat. You have to take your chances. You obviously have to be combative in the midfield and defense and be aggressive in that sense of the word. But there's an edginess around this Arsenal team when it comes to how they deal with the referees, how they've dealt with crowds in the past, that I think is just seeping in a bit too much and crossing that line from aggressiveness in terms of their mentality and toughness, and then recklessness and being too aggressive. So if I'm Arteta, I'm saying, okay, you lost against, you know, a good Bournemouth team. That's not an easy fixture anyway. You're down to 10 men. You lost. Whatever. You got to flush down the toilet. I'm not too worried about that. But there's a bigger point, I think, here to be wary of if you're Arteta, saying, all right, like you said, stay focused. Everyone, cool heads need to prevail. We're down a couple players right now. We can't sink our title chances before we even get going here. Like you said, they cannot afford too many more games like this to the likes of Bournemouth. And there's no disrespect to Bournemouth, but you know, when you're Arsenal and you're competing with City and Liverpool, you can't drop these games. So Arteta's got to be aware of that. And getting on to the next game, the City game, the way Man City came back in the final minute and nicked the dramatic winner, John Stones again. I mean, it's more of the same from City. Do you think that there's more signs of weakness that they've had against a poor Wolves team? I know it was away from home, but they weren't amazing on the day. It was a set piece in the last minute that got them over the line. I mean, is that a sign of this Rodri injury catching up with them, or are they kind of just ticking along and this is another sign of them being great, winning another close game?
Well, it was another Gvardiol screamer. That also sent them into the lead. So they're relying on some, you know, wonder goals to get them ahead. I think this title race is quite open at the moment, especially with that Rodri injury. City, again, nearly slipping up there. I don't think they're looking quite as secure without Rodri at the base of that midfield. I rate Kovacic. I think he is a viable alternative, but he's just not the same player. I don't think anyone in the world really is the same player. Listen, in terms of the game, lots of possession, as you'd expect, but under 2 XG, so maybe is the De Bruyne loss, and also Foden not really starting many games. Is that hurting them? Now, listen, we seem to say this, not exactly this every season, because the injury scenario is
different. I feel like it's different with Rodri. That's the caveat.
I think it's different. I think you're right. However, we have to acknowledge the fact that they do usually hit their stride in the spring. But with Rodri out for the season, the dip in chance creation with Foden not really playing that much, De Bruyne out, I think now is the time, and Arsenal haven't quite seized the opportunity. Now is the time for them to pounce. Liverpool seem like they're doing it. Can this be the season where they mount another, maybe not win it, but can they hang in there for a little bit longer, get that one step closer, and then maybe Pep is gone the next season and they're ready to take that leap? I don't know. We can talk about Liverpool, maybe not. But yeah, I just feel like if I'm the other two teams, I'm thinking this is our time to pounce and at least get ahead a little bit.
Yeah. I want to talk about Foden for a sec because I think it's the fallout of the summer, and he played so many games, didn't have a proper preseason, was probably a bit behind in his fitness. And then Savinho comes in, they're getting contributions elsewhere. I think it's bizarre because he was, did he win PFA Player of the Year last year? I think he did.
He was the best player in the league last season, in my opinion, at least.
And then playing for a team like Man City, you come back and he's not really getting minutes. He's not playing. He's not nearly as influential as he has been in years past. And it speaks to the, I don't know what the word is, just raw strength of this Man City squad that you can lose or not have the best player in the league. Maybe two best.
Probably two best.
And we're not even talking about De Bruyne being out.
Still have a great team.
And still have an unbelievable team. And that just speaks to Pep. And I mean, for the sake of parity in the league, I want to see the backside of Pep. I just can't have these conversations year after year. I kind of do now want to have a conversation about parity in the league because it's what is it, seven of eight in the last years that City have won the league.
Yeah, something like that. Three in a row, obviously.
I mean, if Pep decides to stay around, what's stopping them and what's stopping the league? I mean, where does this is it how things were under Sir Alex and United? And I think the Premier League has such charm because in years past there were two or three, and there are two or three teams that could win the league this year, but with Man City and the money that's come in. I mean, what does the future look like if Pep decides to stay? And if he decides to leave, does that open things up for Liverpool and Arsenal? I think obviously yes.
Obviously opens things up. I think if he stays, the worry is you get another Klopp, sort of Liverpool team, right? Or that gets so close so many times. And maybe they go over the line once, like they did during COVID. But they run out of steam. They take a dip. They weren't really challenging. I mean, last season was a good season, but nobody expected them to win it. They just couldn't stay up there. And that's the fear. And then it's a reset, new manager. That's the fear. You don't want to see that happen to Arsenal. You want to see, an even sort of battle. Arsenal pick one off this year. Maybe City get it the next year. You want to see competition. You don't want to see consistency at the top of the table, right? So the fear is that it's just the other teams are just nearly there and they just can't get over the line. Or like I said, maybe they get there once but it's just they run out of steam because we know the life of managers in the Premier League can often be short. I mean, look how much it took out of Jurgen Klopp. He was there for 7-8 years and he only got one, and he's just 90 points, couldn't do it. I mean, it's just an unbelievable level. It was putting up these points totals in the Fergie era. I think United, the year they won the treble, maybe won it with 75 points or something. Yeah. This is a new level. So it's so hard to maintain if you don't have the depth and just the mental toll, the physical toll, the Champions League format expanding. Yeah. There are so many games. City have the squad to deal with it. Arsenal, we'll see. I mean, they did great last year. Going nearly all the way with City toe-to-toe, crashed out a little bit early in the Champions League maybe, but did okay. But can they do it again? I don't know. I think you have to keep replenishing the squad. You have to keep adding. I mean, City were so dominant, and then they add Haaland. You have to keep looking up. You cannot accept, that's the level you're at.
That's where I can't get my head around. It defies logic that Pep and this is Pep's greatness, that he's able to motivate these players year after year. Because while, yes, like you said, they have replenished with the likes of Haaland and little additions here and there, like Gvardiol over the years. It's a lot of the same guys, and it's Rodri and Ruben Diaz and De Bruyne and Foden. And I'm just amazed at how they can just go again. And it's up to the Liverpools and Arsenals of the league to go again after coming short, which is even harder, I think, because, once you've done it, you have that know-how And Arsenal and this new Liverpool team don't have that yet. So we're coming up to, with Pep's contract, I think we're coming into kind of an inflection point and a key moment.
Yeah, this is big.
With the trial as well, with everything that could happen.
The 115.
We'll see about that. All right, we're moving on to probably the biggest piece of news in quite a while, international football. Thomas Tuchel will be the new England manager. Obviously, England came so agonizingly close to winning the Euros this summer, came short. Gareth Southgate left his post. Lee Carsley has been the interim guy, just kind of picking whoever, but we've kind of been waiting for the permanent man to take England to the 2026 World Cup in the United States and Mexico and Canada, and it will be former PSG, Dortmund, Chelsea, Bayern manager, most recently Thomas Tuchel. Harrison, as a dual citizen, England.
Yes.
What do you
as an
make,
England fan?
Is this man the right man to bring football home?
I think he is. I think he's a great manager with a great CV. I think he's got an excellent track record in knockout competitions, which is helpful, obviously. I think a lot of people have been obviously criticizing, not necessarily him, but maybe the FA and maybe the fact that we don't have an English option, or why didn't we take an English option? Listen, there is no English option that is even close to Thomas Tuchel's level, I think. Sure, it's a shame that we haven't seen a lot of high-quality English coaches come through, but I think this isn't really a time for a project and development. This is the time for England to go and win a World Cup, and you have to get the best man for the job because time is ticking. Harry Kane's not going to be around forever. I know a lot of the team is young, but you know, this is a win-now situation for England, in my opinion. I don't think anyone will care if Tuchel is holding up the trophy at MetLife Stadium in 2026.
It's at MetLife Stadium.
That is all that matters. I couldn't care less what nationality you are. Obviously, the preference for everyone is to have a homegrown and English coach lead England. You know, it's our best against your best. I get that. But the fact of the matter is, there are no qualified English coaches available. Graham Potter is not qualified to coach England. I think he could be a good manager one day, but it's not the right time. Eddie Howe, I would have been fine seeing Eddie Howe on the job, but it doesn't seem like they could get him out of Newcastle. He's doing a great job there. Why would he want to leave? It's a fun project. There was a little bit of turmoil, but I think that's gone quiet. Who else? Frank Lampard. I mean, what are we doing here? You know, so it's about getting this team over the line, and I think Tuchel is probably the right man to do that at this moment. His track record's great. He speaks great English. He's managed in England. He knows some of the players. He knows. I just think this is a guy who can get teams ticking, who can get teams through cup competitions. That's kind of what you need right now if you're England.
Thomas Tuchel is a guy who perhaps rubs players the wrong way, rubs front offices and management the wrong way, but it usually leads to better performances in a knockout tournament. We saw that with Chelsea. And you now have the luxury of, well, it's not really that long term. Like, he's not going to see these players super often. He'll have relationships with them, obviously, but in a much more limited capacity than the day-to-day basis of a club. That goes for the leadership people as well. And if he goes balls to the walls and, you know, tries to just get every last drip of talent and performance out of these players, and then he burns a couple bridges after 2026, it's like, okay, fine, we'll get rid of him, and then maybe Pep will be available, or Eddie Howe will. So for now, like you said, he's the right guy. Because
it's worth a punt.
He can burn the bridges, it's okay, but it's high risk, high reward. I kind of look at him like I look at Jose Mourinho in like 2 or 3 years ago, when people would kind of talk about him being the guy to come into a club, but you kind of knew it was only for a little bit of time because he'd end up burning the bridges. So I think Tuchel is the right man. It's interesting that he's not English, just from a fan perspective, because while you and a lot of people will say it doesn't really matter where he's from, getting the fan buy-in, I think, is a different thing. Will the Englishman be singing songs about Thomas Tuchel on the way to the final? Maybe if he wins it, there'll be songs about him, but you know, Southgate did capture the fan base, especially in Russia in 2018, because he played for England.
There was a feel-good factor.
There was.
But we can go to new places from there.
True.
You know, I think Southgate brought us to this level. Thank you for your service. Great. Let's keep that going, but let's play with a bit more tactical now. So let's play some decent football. I know Tuchel can be pragmatic, but let's just go and win a tournament. That's what it's all about.
And it'll be interesting to see how he lines up tactically, because he's shown flexibility across the clubs he's played at. And I mean, things didn't really end great at Bayern. So he's got something to prove as well, because it's been a little bit since they won that Champions League. He hasn't really done it since then. He'll have a point to prove in England after the fallout with Boley and Chelsea. So he'll be excited. He'll be raring to go. He'll be salivating at the players at his disposal. I mean, he already knows Harry Kane from this time at Bayern. He knows, I was about to say Cole Palmer. He doesn't know Cole Palmer, but I'm sure.
Reece James could come back into
James,
the fold.
Yeah, other guys that are in and around the squad. And when you manage the Premier League, you get to know your opponent. So I think it's the right fit. And like, I don't really know who the other option would have been, even another non-Englishman. Like, who is really that guy? Like, you're not going to bring in, I think, Jose a few years ago before his stock plummeted drastically. So I think it checks all the boxes. So a very interesting one. I think England will line up as probably the favorites, or at least, you know, top two or three teams alongside the usuals come 2026. Very excited for that tournament for obvious reasons. All right, let's get into the random, not so random segment of the week. We are going to do this season's underrated 11 so far. We've each got 11 guys, formations. We'll see what we have. Let's start in goal, though, Harrison. Who is your goalie for this underrated 11?
So I have gone for a man who is really standing out for a team in the bottom half, Mads Hermansson at Leicester City. His post-shot XG numbers are in the top 1% of goalies in Europe. Very, very impressive. He has been really consistent for Leicester, who will be facing a lot of shots this season, I think it's fair to say. So they need him to continue this form if they want to stay up. But yeah, he's been excellent so far. He was brilliant versus Arsenal. I know they lost that game, but looks like a really good shot stopper.
Yeah, I saw him when I was looking up the stats, but I was always wary of those kind of guys because their save numbers look good, but it's usually because the denominator is higher and they face lots of shots. Not to say that the likes of Allison and Ederson wouldn't have similar stats, but I went with Matt Sells, a guy from Forest. He's eighth in goals prevented, which might not sound great, but with a team like Forest who have done okay, it's kind of that mix between they're always under the cosh and they might dominate a game or two, and then he'll be called into action. So I think he's been okay, pretty solid, and I don't think anyone's really said his name. So in terms for underrated, I'm not saying he's the best, but underrated.
No, I think that ticks that box.
I'm going with Sells.
I like
left
it.
Back, who do you got?
Left back was tricky. There seems to be a dearth in quality of left backs just in the world right now. I don't know what it is. It's tough. It was tough to find.
Yeah.
But I've gone for Lewis Hall
at
Newcastle. 8 games, 5 starts. He's playing a lot more minutes now with Byrne at center back and the injuries they've had there in the back line. But I think he's just a player that seems to give you a 7 out of 10 every week. Mm. You know, just solid. Does the defensive side of the game well. You know, good tackle, interception, and block numbers. He's a good progressive passer as well. So, yeah, I think Lewis Hall has been quite steady for Newcastle and looks to have cemented his place in the team after not a rocky start, but a slow burner, really, with him, his Newcastle career so far. I think he's claimed that position this season for Newcastle.
And he could be someone, talking about England, left back, desperately needs somebody. I went for someone who is teetering on the edge of underrated, but I think he's one of the best in the league. I don't think he gets that much credit. I'm going with Anthony Robinson of Fulham. He's fifth amongst left backs in average SOFA score rating, averaging a 7.09. So you know what you're going to get from him week in, week out. I think Fulham have been a pretty underrated team this year under Marco Silva. And Robinson's pace is just brilliant. He can whip in a ball. He's getting a couple assists. He's going to be a key player for Pochettino and the U.S. men's national team in 2026. So I went with Robinson. I think people are wising up to that. He's a quality left back, but I think he's genuinely top two or three because, like you said, there just really aren't that many world-class left backs in the league.
Yeah,
right,
England
now
are probably bummed they didn't get onto him earlier because he'd be great now.
Yeah. All right, center backs, who do you got?
Center back. A few options here. First one, I've got Nathan Collins having a sneaky good season for Brentford, who I have to say, they've been better than I expected them to be this season, Brentford. He leads the league in blocks, Seventh in the league for aerial duels won. He's got one goal so far, that header against Wolves. I think with Collins, you know, I think Pinnock often gets the credit in the Brentford back four, but Nathan Collins has been really, really solid. 8 games, 8 starts. I'd argue he's been Brentford's best player behind Mbeumo this season, I think. I think he's been that good, and you just don't hear about him that much.
I also have Nathan Collins.
There you go.
In my team. 7.35 average SOFA score. He's top four in the league for that. Averages 4 ball recoveries a game. And quick thing on Collins, he came over from Wolves, I believe, a few years ago. So Wolves, I mean, we've seen how down in the dumps they are. That was another guy they let go for around, you know, 25, 30 million to a team in and around them. Really not good business. As we've talked about, Wolves, they're in trouble. Collins, I also add. My other one was Jan-Paul Van Hekke of Brighton, someone I think who is demanded to play out from the back a bit more, but he's got a nice 7.1 average SOFA score. It ranks 12th in the league in that regard. So a top 15 center back for a team that it's not always easy to put in good performances for in Brighton, a team who likes to dominate the ball, couldn't get caught out easily with a high line under Hertzler. Van Hekke, kind of prototypical Brighton, find a guy they found, great scouting, come in and done a good job, suits their system well. So he's my other center back.
My other center back, I was thinking about Van Hekke, that's a good shout. Pau Torres, okay. I think he really is that consistent number one center back for Villa. And you don't really hear, I think he gets some props, but you know, we talk a lot about Konsa, and we love to talk about Watkins and Martinez and Duran this season and Onana's start to the season. But Pau Torres sometimes doesn't get enough credit. He's been excellent for Villa with 8 games, 8 starts. Just an excellent sort of two-way center back, the modern center back. You know, his progressive carry distance is second in the league, only to Ruben Diaz in that City team, who we know, you know, love to play out from the back, and their center backs get a lot of touches. So a good defender, a progressive defender. He's been excellent for Unai Emery, really since he's come in, but this season especially.
All right, finishing off the back line. This guy, I think people have accepted that he's had a good start, but he's playing for a team that's just going through so much negativity. That's Nusair Mazraoui of United. I just think he's been quality. I think it's not an easy step to make coming from the Bundesliga, where he didn't light it up. To come into a dysfunctional Premier League team and really still stand out. I think it speaks to how good Mazraoui has been. And in terms of all the signings that we've criticized under Erik ten Hag, I think he's a guy that's come in and kind of just done a good enough job, made that position kind of his own. I know he's still competing with the likes of Dalot while Shaw comes back to fitness. He's a player I like. West Ham almost, you know, were linked with him this summer. So I went with Mazraoui right back.
I like that shout. Was thinking about him as well. I think he's been probably United's best signing so far this summer. I went for Pedro Porro. I think he's a player that everyone rates, but just on this season, I think he's been excellent, and I haven't heard him being given a ton of props. His underlying numbers on both sides of the ball are excellent. Tied for 5th in the league for passes into the penalty area with Palmer and Savinho. He's a right back. Yeah. Like, you know, that I love that. That's very, very Ange, of course. But just a really consistent performer for Tottenham, bombing down that right-hand side. He plays every game, starts every game, offers a huge attacking threat. He's got one goal already this season. I think he's off to another really good start for Spurs, who have been on sort of a bumpy road so far this season. I think we sort of believe in the project there, but wanted to shout out Pedro Porro because I think he's been quite consistent.
All right, moving on to midfield. You just did me a solid, typifying my point here, my defensive midfielder. You just listed a plethora of Aston Villa players, but not the guy who leads all central midfielders in average SOFA score. That's Youri Tielemans. He's got a 7.6 average SOFA score rating. And like you said, a lot of the talk has been about Onana in midfield, but Tielemans was a guy at Leicester who we saw glimpses of when they were right, was really good, made the move over to Villa, and we kind of all were like, is he going to be a bench guy, rotational guy? Then they lost Douglas Luiz, and Onana came in, and I was like, all right, Onana's going to be the guy. But Youri Tielemans has been fantastic in that midfield, having to play big games in the Premier League, big games in the Champions League. I think we've seen the best of him under Unai Emery. I think he's been quality. I think he's, you know, in that role for this Villa team is crucial. And I don't think he gets talked about, you know, enough.
No, he has cemented his place in that Villa midfield for sure. My more defensive midfielder is a player I talked about earlier, Moises Caicedo. I think he had a tough start to his Chelsea career, but his defensive numbers are just fantastic. Fourth in the league for tackles, leads the league in dribblers tackled. He's got two assists this season, you know, and I think we saw from him on Sunday really what he can do. Breaks up play really well and looks to get it forward. He looks a lot more comfortable this season for Chelsea and clearly just the stalwart in that midfield. He plays every week. The question is who plays next to him, whether it's Enzo or Lavia or, you know, Dewsbury Hall. They've got options there, but Caicedo is really the guy now in that midfield with Palmer ahead of him. So he's fifth in the league for through balls as well. So really just another sort of two-way midfielder showing his defensive side of the game well, which we know he could do, but offensively as well as passing numbers, really, really solid. So I wanted to give Caicedo a shout-out for this improving Chelsea team.
Yeah, and he needed to make that jump, given the price tag. My other kind of holding midfielder is Ryan Gravenberch from Liverpool. He's got a top six, average SofaScore rating amongst central midfielders. I think the big thing with him has been in this transition of play under Arne Slot, he requires the central midfielders to be a bit more composed on the ball in and around the 18-yard box. I think Gravenberch has done a good job adapting his style to that because he's a tall guy. He moves pretty well, but around the box, he's been able to link up with the likes of Szoboszlai and McAllister to feed, you know, Jota, Salah, Diaz going forward. I think he's been a big positive, and I think he provides depth now because, as we talked about a couple seasons ago when Liverpool were lacking in midfield, they bought all these players last summer. He was the one that kind of didn't click. You know, McAllister was Premier League proven. Szoboszlai came in, did a great job. But Gravenberch was like, there's potential there, but we're seeing some shaky signs that we saw at Ajax. I think this year he's made the jump. He's looked much improved. I think he's not the reason why Liverpool are doing what they're doing, but I think he's a reason. And I don't think enough people are talking about him. So he's my other midfielder in the pivot.
Yeah, I think Slot has given him a job that he can do really well as that sitting player in the midfield. I've gone for, so my second midfielder out of three is a player who, again, kind of didn't really hit the ground running in his first season at Brighton. This season, he looks much better. Carlos Baliba. His tackle, interception, block, aerial duel numbers are all really, really impressive. I think he's really taken a step forward for Brighton this season. He's been really consistent, seems to play every week, six starts in seven games played. He cemented himself in that midfield. He's got one goal, one assist, so just looks like another, I keep using the term, sort of two-way midfielder, does both sides of the game really well. And he's been excellent for Herzler this season, who, you know, has put a lot of trust in him in that Brighton midfield. And they've got options in there, too. We know how they recruited in the summer. So Baliba has been excellent for Brighton, I think.
All right, my number 10 is a guy who I think people were starting to come around on, Morgan Rogers of Villa. And he kind of typifies the don't read into stats all that well because he's a guy who only has, I think, a couple assists and a goal. But he's just so influential. And he is this unique, big, fast, fearless midfielder that I think represents like Unai Emery's kind of identity out on the pitch. He is not afraid to get stuck in. He's got quality to maneuver the midfield in the 18-yard box. He's got quality to score when needed. And he's this hybrid kind of guy who can get forward and almost play as a second striker, but can also kind of defend his own 18-yard box. So to use your term, a two-way player. I think he's been excellent. I think he's been really good. I think the England team is in his sights should he continue his form, especially in the Champions League. I think he's brilliant. I saw him live at the London Stadium last year when West Ham drew Villa, and I was kind of like, who's this guy? I had to look him up. They had bought him from the Championship. But he come on leaps and bounds. I think he's, you know, looks like a solidified, not just Premier League player, but a guy who can play in, you know, European games because of his stature and physicality. I've been really impressed with Morgan Rogers.
Yes, good shout. He, I think, has really burst onto the scene sort of end of last season, but this season especially. He just a fun player to watch. He's one of those guys you enjoy, you know, turning on the TV and seeing him play with Watkins up there. My most attacking of my midfield three is a player I really wasn't sure about going into this season, made the move from Newcastle to Nottingham Forest. And we all sort of questioned the fee, but the more you look into it, the more you think, oh, I guess it's just a PSR deal with Vlachodimos going the other way. Elliot Anderson has been really good for Forest this season. Started 7 out of 8 games in the midfield and looks to be adapting really well to this new role he has. I think his dribble numbers have been excellent. And like I said, you know, it's a transfer that a lot would have questioned. And he just looks really comfortable, been performing well for Forest, who, by the way, I know we've mentioned it, you know, a little bit, having a really good season in 8th. And he's been, you know, the guy, or one of the guys at least, in that midfield. So I wanted to give him a shout out because a lot of uncertainty going around Forest this season, and especially that transfer, but he's really risen to the task.
Yeah, I came across Anderson when I was looking at some players. I've been impressed with him. That was kind of a bizarre transfer, but he's made that kind of role his own. All right, moving on to the front three. I'm going to start on the left flank. I went with a Bournemouth man, Marcus Tavernier. Only one goal, but he's played all 8 games, and I think he represents someone that Andoni Iraola can trust to play his style of football. He's energetic. He'll run up and down the pitch. He's a danger man in behind, someone that you don't really see a whole lot of on the front pages, but I think he's a quality player. I think in a better team, he could really thrive, perhaps, so keep an eye on him. I think he's only 25, 26 years of age. His brother, James, I think he was the captain of Rangers for a while. That's how I knew of him when Bournemouth signed him. But a bit of an unknown shout. He's not lighting the goal sheet on fire, but I think he's a tidy player that you don't hear a lot about.
Very under the radar. We love to talk about Semenyo for Bournemouth. Yes. But Tavernier has been very solid. I had to have an Everton player in this 11. I was, you know, wondering whether this guy was is he really underrated, or are people giving him his props? I'm going to mention him anyway. Illiman Ndiaye. He has been the spark we've needed since Richarlison left. So fun to watch. 2 goals from only 0.8 XG so far this season in 6 starts. He has cemented his place on that left-hand side. McNeil has moved inside. We look so much better. And by the way, he works really hard for the team and looks like our most dangerous player. He's been at least a 7 out of 10 every week. He's 5th in the league for successful dribbles. He's just a player, a type of player we don't have and haven't had for so long. Just retains the ball really well, carries the ball so well, excellent dribbler, and he can finish. He loves to cut inside on that right foot and just looks really, really dangerous. So all the Everton fans have really enjoyed watching him this season, and he's already got a new song. So if that is anything to go by.
Rendition? Anyone?
Well, I will tell you to go and listen to Ryan Rooney's, who came up with it on Twitter, this guy, like some scouser with a guitar. But yeah, it does have some expletives, so I'm not sure if it's appropriate to repeat, but from Senegal to Bramley Moore.
Here
he's
we go.
The one that we adore, or something like that.
That's a good one. All right, right wing, I went with a Tottenham player, Brennan Johnson. He's got 3 goals on the year. I think the pressure was starting to build on Brennan Johnson, especially from the Spurs fans after what was really a disappointing first season after a big move from Forest. I think people thought he was going to hit the ground running. The style suited him. But I think you're starting to see that final product come through. And if he can be the guy to convert these chances for Spurs, I think he can rack up the goals. So he does only have 3 goals in the year, but we're only 8 games in. We have to remember that. I think he's been impressive. Keep an eye on him for someone who can potentially make a run to get double-digit goals and assists. You never know with this Ange team. I think the opportunity is there for Brennan Johnson. I think there's a lot of potential there that's untapped, especially after last year. I think you're starting to see it this year.
And he's going to play because Kulusevski is now a number 8 in Madison. So that spot is open on the right for Brennan Johnson to really make his own, and he seems to be doing that. I've gone for someone who I totally forgot was a Fulham player until the start of this season, Adama Traore.
Mm.
He's been excellent, man. Progressive carry numbers are in the top 5% of attacking midfielders and wingers in Europe. He's 3rd in the league for successful dribbles. 8 games, 8 starts. He's playing every week. He's got 1 goal. This is the thing. 1 goal from 2.45 expected goals.
Okay.
So he does always underperform his XG, but he's just a constant threat on that right-hand side. And I think he's given Fulham, you know, a new profile of attacker that they don't really, nobody really has. But, you know, they've got a lot of these sort of tricky wingers and inside forwards like Iwobi and Smith-Rowe and Pereira. Traore offers something totally different, and they've really utilized him. So credit to Marco Silva, because A lot of managers have had Adama Traore, and none really know quite what to do with him, but he looks much more at home in sort of a right wing, out and out winger role. 2 assists and 4 big chances created so far this season. He's on track to probably have his having his best season we've seen from him in the Premier League. So much potential there and athleticism. We just haven't seen it consistently yet with Traore, but boy, is he having a good season.
Yeah, for about half a year, Nuno cracked the code with him and Raul Jimenez into COVID. I don't know, that was like the 2019-20 season. He was brilliant. And he has that opportunity because I'm freaking fast he is. It's unreal. All right, my striker, last man here. Don't think I would have ever thought I'd put this guy in an underrated 11, but I did. 5 goals in 8 games from 3.3 XG. Chris Wood is a guy who has nicked goals in the past, but he was dreadful at Newcastle. Didn't really do it in his first kind of 18 months at Forest, but he's come in this year and kind of been the guy. 8 games played, 8 games started, averaging 80 minutes a game. He's out there, and he's scoring goals, which is a hard thing to do in the Premier League. 5 goals already in 8 games? I mean, there's only a couple players that have more. You're looking at the likes of Haaland and Palmer with more than that. So good old Chris Wood, 32 years of age, still putting the goals in. Not an easy thing to do. I don't think anybody's talking about it. I certainly wasn't prior to this week.
What more can you ask for? As a mid-table team, they're an eighth. I had him as well. He gets disrespected. The guy has 5 goals from only 3.31 expected goals. He's overperforming his XG. He's no tap-in merchant. Yeah. He's Chris Wood, you know? So he gives you consistency, man. And I'm with you. I think that's really all you can ask for as a Forest fan right now. We'd love to see a Wan Yi back in there, but they're doing okay with Chris Wood, man. Yeah. He's not sexy up front, no. but he gets the job done.
He does. All right, that's going to round out our 11s. If we want to just go through it quickly. Sells in goal, Robinson left back, Van Hecke and Collins, my two center backs, with Mazraoui at right back, a midfield three of Tielemans, Grabenberch, and Morgan Rogers, and then a front three of Tavernier, Brennan Johnson, and Chris Wood.
We only overlapped with two. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Hermanson in goal of Leicester City. Pedro Porro, Nathan Collins, Pau Torres, and Lewis Hall across the back. A midfield three of Moises Caicedo, Carlos Baliba, and Elliot Anderson. And then my front three with Adama Traore on the right, Illiman Ndiaye on the left, and Chris Wood up front.
All right, that is going to do it for this week's episode. We'll be back next week. Until next time, thank you for listening.